The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Craig Konstantinovich. Hey guys, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good to have you here. Today's topic is a good one. We actually did a podcast recently on elder care and special needs, and we kind of wanted to get a little bit more into the weeds in one aspect of the conversation. So today we're talking about the financial and emotional challenges of long-term care, which is a behemoth of a topic. So very emotional. If you've ever been through it, I have, unfortunately, a couple of times. A lot to think about, a lot of emotion behind this. So I want to kind of pull back the layers and give some people strategies and kind of a checklist of things to do, starting with what to do first, right? Because of the emotional aspect of it. So I have a bunch of questions teed up. I want to first talk about the emotional stress. I mean, like I said before, this can be overwhelming. And just some people are very young when they have to do this for a parent or a loved one. So how do you know where to begin? I mean, you've got to obviously turn off the emotion, but that's not possible. So as certified financial planners, you've dealt with this a lot. I'm sure you've encountered different walks of life having to go down this path. So let's start with the first step. What's the first conversation you have with somebody preparing a loved one for this journey?
Really depends on where you're at in your financial life. You know, there's some people where they're knocking on the door, they're getting ready to enter potentially a facility right away, and you may be able or may be fortunate enough to work with several generations. So you can kind of have a conglomerate conversation and say, okay, well, here's what we have decided as a plan of attack. But that's a very rare instance. That's normally not what happens. So normally, the first thing that you want to do is, for your own self, is figure out what you want. Figure out where you would go, what places you would want to consider. I always think back to whether it's my grandfather or several other people I've heard from where you put me in here. And that's sometimes the most emotionally triggering thing that you can hear. So if you can at least come up with a game plan on places that you would consider, places that offer the care that you think that you'll need, that can create a short list so that way you can feel more empowered that you're going to a spot you want to be, not that you're placed somewhere.
And we come into people's lives at different stages. So from the planning standpoint that you're talking about, Craig, I think the conversation should be more about asking questions to then provoke the thought so that when you do get to that stage of life, the emotions can be dealt with, but you're not really concerned about that financial piece. Now, it doesn't always work out like that. And again, we come into situations where we meet somebody when they're 80 years old versus meeting them when they're 20 or 30. Mm-hmm. So it's a frustrating conversation to sit here and see the costs continue to go up. That's one of the big problems that we'll get into. But because if it continues at the pace we're at, 4.5% per year.
It's almost going to be the college round two.
Well, I think it's there already, right? And it's 20 years now we've been looking at these numbers. And I remember 20 years ago people saying, you're crazy. Those numbers aren't going to be actually what they are. And
not to go on a sort of take us out of a tangent, but it seems to me that real estate is getting, big business real estate is now getting into bed with long-term care business. So now it's becoming sort of a, you can start out with independent living and you can buy a house, which transitions then to assisted living, which then transitions to memory care. So I feel like those two industries are kind of collaborating as far as the costs are concerned. And that's the motivation.
Part of that, though, is the demand, right? You got the baby boomers aging now. So there is a need for it. The other part, though, to your point, that's the planning question. Do you want to go into a community when you are of sound mind and healthy and can age in place and grow? And we've helped people through that conversation, too, but it's a lot. There's a lot to discover. You got to ask the questions, and it's hard. But if you can get both spouses together, if you're married, That's the key. Because if you end up in a situation where one spouse needs care, the other doesn't, and then you're maintaining two households, that can be a big detriment to your plan.
Well, that's usually when the, you know, financial cancer really starts to kick in at that point, because most people aren't equipped, prepared. We talked a couple weeks ago about a potential option, or a different podcast ago, about a couple options on how to possibly fund a scenario where you do have dual living expenses utilizing that reverse mortgage or that home equity conversion mortgage. But yeah, I mean, that's really kind of the worst case scenario. And the other piece too is, I mean, to Tyler's point about the demand, like right now, at least there's been a lot of studies. There's been a lot of people that have said that we do want to make sure that we have the opportunities to somewhat progressively get care at the same location. There's a lot of good studies. There's a lot of good research on the benefits of doing that way, which is where the supply and demand kind of come into play, and why you are starting to see facilities become more accessible for multiple styles of needs. But that's the big piece, is just understanding, like, for instance, not every facility has a memory care unit. So if you know that Alzheimer's or dementia runs in your family, or if that's your biggest concern, that may start to dwindle the list right there. If you have any kind of developmental needs, or depending on which activities of daily living you can or cannot do, that may, again, dwindle the list down further. So there's so many options. There's so many nuances. There's so many things. It can be overwhelming. And that's where, to Tyler's point, it doesn't matter if you're 20, if you're 80, if you're 30, anywhere in between, we're talking about long-term care, because you got to have a plan. Mm-hmm. You may not be ready to execute the plan right now, but you've at least got to have some kind of playbook to reference when it comes time to make these decisions.
So the first swipe is to have the conversation with your spouse or you silly rabbit, spouse or your children. Yep. And then it sounds like the second is to assess what your living expenses are, if you can even afford down the road, seek the help of the professional, the certified financial planner, to help build out your plan. But I think a component to this also is to assess the marketing. I mean, the marketing out there is so different from facility to facility, or community. Let's call it a community, because it's not a prison. It's a community.
Right.
And some of them, have you ever heard of the, there's a place in Florida, and it just left my brain, but there's actually a movie made about it. It's the deluxe place to retire and transition, you know, if need be. It's got everything. So it just depends on if you're a social person, if you would prefer not to be engaged in social activities and want to live sort of, you know, independently away from all of that. Some people thrive in those environments and some don't. So you have to have those conversations.
So let's go through those questions, because I think that's important for a starting point for people. So the first question is, where do you want care? Where you live currently, or would you want to go into a community? Mm-hmm. That's the first question.
Because there's in-home care too, right?
Yeah, and that's, there's...
And several
we'll get
different
to how you pay
that.
For this in a minute, but yeah, there's different levels to it, right? So four hours a day, 8, 12 hours, and so forth, and the cost goes up, as you can imagine, for each level. But that's the first question to ask yourself. And then if it is in place, then look around you. What do we need to modify? What home modifications do we need to make to stay here?
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
That's a big piece. Yeah. And maybe we have a lot of people too that have looked at downsizing. These days, downsizing doesn't really mean down pricing, right?
It's just it's
more expensive, exactly. But smaller space, but it might be more user-friendly. It might be more accessible. So that's the big question.
And that's contingent on your health, too.
Correct.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you can climb stairs.
Yeah.
You should climb stairs as long as you can, right?
Right. Yeah. We've got a 5-level split, and I always joke with my wife that, oh, hey, right now, at least, this is the forever home, but hey, in retirement, we're going to reconsider, because those steps are going to be definitely traumatizing at that point.
At least they're split up a little bit.
Yeah,
tell me about it. We have we have two sets of stairs and a landing in between, and I can tell you firsthand, it's not fun to fall down those steps.
So
be sure you're healthy before you make the decision if you want a two-story.
Well, and that's a big piece too. I think from the housing standpoint, the other part of the question is it not only like the house, but you look at your family too, and you have to kind of think through, what's the family history been like? That's one of the first questions we ask people is, tell us about your family history. Has anybody needed extended care either in a facility or at home or whatever it might be? And that's really the best starting point, because you really don't know how this is going to play out. Mm-hmm. And so it's, if you look at your family history to see kind of how that progressed over time, that's also a good starting point, I think, just human nature to actually think about it seriously. Mm-hmm. So when you see your parents go through it, or perhaps your grandparents at some point, that gives you a gauge for what to expect. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Craig, you might be 30, you might be 40, but to have a plan in place is the key. Now, we're not saying go buy insurance. That's not, we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But there's a cost to it, right? There's a big cost to the care. But if you can kind of have a framework for what you think we would want to have happen, that's the key. And that's really all you can do at your 30s, 40s, and 50s, because you're probably not going to need the care till 75 or 80. That's typically the average age. But there's a lot there to just build the framework and have the conversation today, but also continue to have the conversation because your goals and wishes are going to change.
Well, and the other factor too, I mean, again, maybe to draw attention to the elephant in the room we're not talking about is have a good understanding with your spouse. I mean, if there is a significant age gap between you, maybe it's implied, but it's never verbally stated, like, hey, you're taking care of me. Well, I may not want to, or that may not be what I view as kind of my ideal scenario here. So, again, to your point, like, that, there's so many nuances, there's so many things, and yeah, when we sit down with each couple, we don't necessarily have that same cookie-cutter approach, but we do start to assess certain factors, like financial means, age differential, family history, those kind of things, and then we start talking about, okay, well, here are your options. And then we start looking at, okay, well, does a product, is there an insurance item that would make the most sense, or is it better for us to just plan on spending down what we save in our 401ks, our retirement plans, and, you know, using that to fund that lifestyle or that expense?
And just as a sort of a preempt to that conversation, so we're going to get into the insurance aspect of it, understand that whatever community you choose to live is required by the state to have a grading system. So there's a lot more to this choice than just saying I want to live in a community or I don't. You can actually really refine your search with the Department of Aging and the AARP and the senior groups to actually see the grading system, the rating or grading system of all of these nursing homes, long-term care facilities that are in, you know, in the state. So
it's all the above. But yeah, I mean, the other piece to it too is also understanding the financial impacts. I mean, there are some places where you've got to be on a waiting list for however many months or years, or hey, there may be a large upfront entrance fee that may be refundable at a certain point.
There's a 2-year private pay requirement by some too.
Yep.
You know, when you check into some place, they might require you to pay for 2 years out of pocket before any kind of Medicare or Medicaid kicks in. So you have to understand all of that. And the professionals can really help sort through that for you. It really is a behemoth, a universe in and of itself outside of financial planning.
Yeah. And that's where, like I said, I mean, the worst scenario you could possibly have is the event happens and now we start talking about a long-term care plan.
Right.
You got to have something in place ahead of time.
That's a great segue next to insurance and benefits. And this is one we talk about a lot, and that's long-term care insurance policies. We don't sell products. So the vested interest that we have is the client's, you know, best interest. So having said that, when you're talking to people, I mean, these insurance policies read so complicated. How do people know if they have the right kind of insurance? Where do they even begin to get it?
Yeah, so long-term care is still the baby in the room. It's only been around for about 50 years as far as the insurance policies. Compare that to life insurance, which started like in the 1500s in London. So you got almost 500, 600 years of track record on what to do. A little obvious too if you're either dead or alive with life insurance, right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
So long-term care is a little different with the insurance policies. They've gotten a lot better than what they used to be. 2008 was a rude awakening for the industry. I think what you're seeing now, though, is better in the sense of that they're more accurately priced, but not necessarily better in benefits. Years ago, when we first started doing this, you could buy long-term care insurance policies with lifetime benefits. So if you went in at 65 and you lived till 95, they'd pay you for those 30 years. Nowadays, you're lucky to get 5 years, maybe. I saw one last week with 6 years. Kind of a shared care policy. But the point is long-term care insurance comes with a lot of gotchas because the underwriters for these insurance companies have intentionally left the door open to change the rules as they go.
Yep.
Very different than life insurance and disability insurance for that matter. But they can change the premiums. They can change the inflation riders. They can change the benefit periods, how much they're going to pay out. That's one of the big black eyes with the long-term care insurance industry as a whole. So when you're looking at these policies, they're not all created equal by any means. And you really got to drill down in the specifics of what you would think you would need. Because, again, the purpose of life insurance is to shift the risk to the insurance company away from your plan, meaning you, in theory, could preserve your portfolio or your cash or your CDs, whatever it is, save that for other things or for an inheritance. shift some of the risk of the cost of the care to the insurance company, which of course comes at a cost with the premium. Right. So there's a lot there, but I think the starting point is that the best route to go? Mm-hmm. Do you even need the insurance? And that's what we help evaluate.
Right. And that's to your point, Tyler. The other piece too is when these long-term care policies were first written, they were meant to accompany or supplement the pension benefit you were going to get from your great company for working there for the last 35 years. Well, when the pension system went the way of the dinosaurs, there too and lied the problem where now you've got people that now have to save in this 401k plan. They don't know what that really means. They don't know what this may look like long term. And so a lot of people didn't contribute, didn't participate. And so now you've got a lack of savings and more reliance on these insurance products, which is where you start to see, yeah, they had to pay out significantly and they have had to pay out. So that's where you do have those nuances, those gotchas that started to creep into play. And I mean, now there's still people that had locked in policies 20 years ago that were paying their premiums and they're getting the notice, hey, your premium is going up 100%. Oh, you can't afford that? We understand. We'll keep your premium at the same amount, but we'll reduce your benefits 50%. It's real life. It's still happening. So there has been some other nuances. There have been some changes where you can get more of a guaranteed option, but that's usually using what they call a hybrid policy. So where you basically have a life insurance chassis, if you will, or a life insurance policy you buy, but then it also offers the ability to pay down the death benefit by paying for long-term care should that need arise. So life insurance, annuities, those have been the two dominant factors right now. There's going to be changes because this industry, this need isn't going anywhere. So there's got to be more adaptation. There's got to be more options that have to be presented in order to actually have people feel safe, feel confident, and get the benefits that they need.
Are these rates at all tied into Social Security benefits? I mean, are they speculating? I don't know if we even know the answer to that. So when they're designing these tables, do they consider Social Security payments at all?
No, it's more about life expectancy and your health.
So you're not punished if you're collecting Social Security while you're paying long-term care insurance.
Mm-hmm. No, but you kind of age out of being able to get coverage when you're about 75-ish. It's not the exact number, but once you get beyond that age,
so it's best to get it early.
Well, that's the where's the asterisk?
Exactly.
What define early, right?
Yeah.
The sweet spot is typically late 50s, early 60s, mm-hmm. is what I've heard from insurance agents over the years to purchase. But then, you're locking in that.
That surprises
today,
me.
Yeah, today you'd be paying anywhere from, and I saw one a few weeks ago again, just take it with a grain of salt because not everybody's the same, but $3,000 to $6,000 a year in premium.
Oh, I saw one for $13,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So
a lot of it's state regulated too, right?
The state of Washington now has it mandated where just like Medicare and Social Security taxes, you're paying into a long-term care benefit or a long-term care system. So that way, when you do have that need, you have a state-provided benefit.
Yeah, I think more states are going to go into that,
too. It's been on the legislation or it's been on the ballot, I think, in 5 states right now. And I think there was talks about it hitting congressional conversations or different House conversations across the states for like 15 or 20 states. So, yeah.
So how do you learn if your state, what your status is? Where do you go to figure that out?
It should be available on the state tax website where you get all your different tax information as far as like what your sales tax rates are, your county taxes. If you ask any insurance agent that's in the state, they should have that information for you because they do give you the option, at least, again, referencing Washington, because from what I remember, from what I can recall at this point, I think they're the only ones that have mandated it to this point. But they will allow you then the option to say, do you want to go with the state-provided benefit or do you have a similar enough personal policy that we can basically check off the list?
Wow.
That's, of course, when government gets involved, everything goes perfectly,
my
right?
Brain
so
mm-hmm.
that's one of those challenges, too. Like, do you really want to plan for that or do you want to take the bull by the horns and actually be proactive if you have time to build your bag of money big enough to where you can write the checks? Now, that bag of money's got to be pretty big because right now, again, in Ohio, I'll use that as the example. Full-blown nursing home care, $98,000 a year is the average, increasing at 4.5% per year.
That's not memory care either.
Correct.
That doesn't include ancillary costs like clothing and your favorite deodorant and
oh, yeah.
you know, your goodies and your snacks that you like to have. Yeah. yeah.
National average right now is about a 3-year stay. So you go into nursing home for 3 years and you pass. If you just apply inflation to that, 10, 15 years, you're easily over $1 million for that 3-year stay.
For one person.
For one person, right. So, again, the memory care situation, we've had a few of those. I've seen one that went on 10 years, did not have a long-term care policy, but they were okay. I've seen others where they go into a facility pretty quickly and it's, you know, a couple of months. And then others where they had policies that they couldn't claim because they didn't check the right boxes when they applied. Oof. Like, for example, at-home care. We've seen all those things. So mm-hmm. you really got to, again, start with that conversation of what do you want it to look like if you have the option to plan that, and then look at the cost. The and third part careful. To it is how do you save for it?
Be careful, too, because these people are making commissions mm-hmm. on these products. So this is where the help of the certified financial planner is really relevant here,
mm-hmm.
you know, because yeah. you guys are the generalists. You know a lot about these things. I'm still mind blown about the age, the sweet spot to start, because I don't have long-term care insurance because I always thought it was too expensive for me.
Mm-hmm. And it might be.
You know, I'm in that age group. Mm-hmm. We won't tell you where I am in that age group, but I'm in that age group.
yep.
But I would have thought it would have been 40s, 50s, early 50s.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, and it just depends on the kind of policy that you're looking at and what the, you know, benefits are that you're going to be applying for. I mean, if I were to lock in right now and say, hey, I want to pay for a life insurance policy for the next 30 years that has a long-term care rider option on it, I'm better at choosing that now because for that policy in particular, my premium should remain the exact same for the remainder of my day. So it's better that I locked it in now. But again, that's tying it to a life insurance policy. So that's the predominant factor of what I'm paying for, plus or minus the long-term care benefits. But if you lock in a long-term care policy right now, and again, I understand the nuance here, but if you lock in a long-term care policy now, to Tyler's point, you know, the industry is changing. And so that may be the case. That may be the policy that you have. But then you may get 6 years down the road and you get a notice, hey, your premium's going up 35%. Now you've got to be in a position where do I keep this policy around? Do I still think that I need it? Or do you say, yeah, maybe I just let this go? So it is one of those things where, yeah, the sweet spot normally is that 55 to, you know, 63-ish, if you want to put more specific brackets on it, just because you usually have a better indication at that point if you're going to need it based off of family history. You'll see what your parents are going through. You'll know what your grandparents have gone through. But also that is really when your health is usually as good as it's going to get. And that way you get hopefully the best premiums to have that carried forward.
This is a strange question, I think, but I know that there are certain policies, insurance policies, that can be turned into retirement tools. Can long-term care policies be turned into retirement tools?
And at some tool point? In the sense of what?
I'm thinking of like HSAs. I'm thinking of some of the things that we've talked about in the past, where, you know, universal whole yeah. life insurance policies. I mean, if you've got sort of a leg attached to one of those policies, is that considered, and it's long-term care insurance, is that considered a retirement tool?
I wouldn't put it in that category, but we would think of it as a tool, as a funding source to pay for things in retirement. Essentially, long-term care insurance is disability insurance for retirees.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. So it's a tool that can be used.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so it can be used for multiple things in the plan. And I will say, if you are applying to go into an assisted living community or a nursing home, if you have a long-term care policy active, that's a big call, or put a big check mark in the pro column for you to get in, get off that wait list faster.
Yep.
Because think about it, the assisted living community, they know they're going to get paid for a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now it might not be 3 years, it might only be for 3 years, but that's where they're going to do their actuarial assumptions and see, okay, is this a good fit? So a lot of ways to it, but I've seen recently, I can count on four occasions in the last 6 months or so where people are coming up asking about going in to this, they call them continuing care retirement communities,
mm-hmm.
while you're healthy and living independently. And you're talking anywhere, if I saw one last week, it was $140,000 entry fee, to a couple weeks ago, but before that, $500,000 entry
fee. What's
that cover? That's just to get in the door. That's to get you in.
What?
Yeah. Same spot.
And then you're paying a monthly cost based upon your type of floor plan and so forth. But that's the idea.
So it's basically a mortgage, and then you're paying a monthly payment after that.
No, well, it's just like a down payment.
Right.
Wow.
To Craig's point, some of them come with refundable options and all sorts of different things. But, you know, if somebody passed away right when they go in, the family can get some money back. But there's a lot of ways to do this now. And I think to your point about the construction and what's going on the real estate side, we're not even close to fulfilling the demand that's out there for these types of communities.
No. Wow. Let's talk about the asset depletion, managing and protecting dwindling assets. I mean, this is what I envision. You know, you're paying the monthly cost, you know, for your spouse to be in care, and you're watching your retirement accounts dwindle. How do you keep that from happening when you don't have money to continue funding it, or you don't on the level that you could to increase it enough to protect it?
This is where I know we're not visually here, but I started grinning almost because this is where a lot of elder care attorneys really start to prey on people's fear. Because what they'll start to do is they'll start to talk about ways that you can preserve your estate. You can make sure you have money left over for the healthy spouse. So if there is one spouse out of the two that has the family history and the other one doesn't, again, it's a gamble, but everyone tries to play the Medicaid game. So essentially they try to say, okay, well, in order for me to accomplish this, I need to show very minimal income, very minimal assets, and I need to have the clock, quote, clock, start as far as when did I have my estate depleted? Mm-hmm. Because if you are within 5 years of depleting your estate, Medicaid's going to come back in. They're going to say, we know what game you're playing. We caught on to this. We're going to come back and we're going to try to get your assets.
Because it's a 7-year look back, isn't it?
Five-year look back.
Is it five?
Yep. Yeah. It's a 5-year look back. So that's where, again, you'll start to have elder care attorneys talk about, again, dressing it up, putting lipstick on a pig, so to speak, but a sweetheart's divorce kind of a deal where on paper you're divorced, even though you're still living together, that kind of a thing. But, hey, that way I've separated the assets. I've given my spouse everything. I've got nothing. And now I basically just sit around and wait, hoping that they continue to take care of me. Not advocating for this whatsoever. Big disclaimer there, but that is the idea that is pitched in some of these instances as well as several others.
It's true. It's true that people are doing that.
Yeah.
I think I'm just really naive. Family assets fall under those categories too. So Medicaid can take it all, right?
Yeah. My view on the whole Medicaid thing is, at least for the people we work with, and I think just in general, a goal should be you really shouldn't want to be able to qualify for it.
Mm-hmm.
So
the people that need it should get it.
Yes. It's less than $2,000
in
assets, excluding your primary residence. I mean, think about how hard that would be to deplete for a lot of people, at least that we were in touch with. And I think just it shouldn't really be a goal. But there are facilities now, too, communities where you've got both Medicaid and insurance and self-pay people all living under the same building. It's the same thing. It's not like the horror stories of, oh my gosh, this community is terrible. It's all Medicaid-run facility. It's state-run, blah, blah. There are situations where you have Medicaid-eligible or participants living in the same exact community as somebody who's paying the full rate.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind, too. There's some nuance to that part. But, yeah, the goal should not really be to qualify for Medicaid, in my opinion.
Right. And that's where, you know, asset protection, what other options are there? Again, if you really have concerns about this, the elder care attorney is the person that you should be talking with. But ways to protect your assets, buy the insurance policy. I mean, if that's really what you're concerned about, the whole goal is to have that, protect your assets, cover the need that you envision
having. What if you don't have it?
Well, then you're SOL. But
then you are on the Medicaid situation.
Okay. So it's a light switch.
Yep.
I'm curious to see how this plays out with the state thing that we mentioned earlier, just the state's getting involved with mandatory type programs. It might help, but I don't think it's going to do what they really think it will.
I got to believe, sidebar to my history, I was actually going to go into geriatric care in college. And I interned up, this was a long, long time ago. Things are a lot better now. And I spent 2 weeks in what was a nursing home. I mean, it was a state-funded nursing home. And I won't go into the details. It was something out of you know, a Jack Nicholson movie. You know, it was not good. Mm-hmm. And it changed. I mean, I went home crying every day. It was terrible. Place, you know, communities aren't like that anymore. They're like the place to be now. For they've done a great job of making them interesting and fun and normalized, mm-hmm. as, you know, to your what you're used to. But the costs, they still need to work on that.
Yep.
They still need to work on making it accessible to everybody. I got to believe if the government gets involved, we're going to go backwards to what that looked like in The Shining, as far as my memory is concerned.
Sure hope not.
I can't imagine. My brain gets upset when the government gets involved in this stuff. So I want to keep private companies going, but yeah, you know, make it affordable for people like mm-hmm. us, you know, to be able to get in there. So how do you maintain a steady cash flow for long-term care expenses? You get a second job, you know, in retirement? I mean, if you just, are there any creative ways to do that?
No, I think it goes back to just basic financial planning. Mm-hmm. It applies to any phase. It's just now the expenses going towards a cost of care versus travel and other things. So, and we can plan for that and we can run, of course, projections to look at what that costs. But again, the idea there is if you go into a community, some of your costs will be covered, like the meals will be part of the monthly rent or whatever you want to call it. And you know, the most of the time, I think the factor of trying to work through with somebody and say, okay, what stays, what goes, mm-hmm. you don't really know until you get in there. So from a cash flow perspective, it's basics, just spending less than what you're earning, right? And if you're in your 70s and 80s, your earnings are probably pension, Social Security, and maybe some required minimum distributions from an IRA.
Yep.
Maybe some ordinary income and some things from some investments. But outside of that, you really pay attention to the expense side. Everybody wants to talk about what do I have to make? What do I have to earn to pay? No, it's not about that. It's about what the expense is. So mm-hmm. very disciplined living expense worksheet, looking at the cash flow piece. Don't do a budget because those won't work.
Yep.
The budgets don't work. It's asked what your actual expense is. That's really the key. So, yeah.
And you'll likely compromise on things. Like if you were planning on traveling every single year, well, maybe you're not going to be doing that anymore. Maybe you're doing it for one as opposed to two. But again, yeah, there's no perfect answer. There's no perfect tool here. It's just be aware of what's going out versus what you've got coming in. Make sure that you can best manage it. And then the other piece too is, I mean, usually the one asset that most people focus on the most that they're hesitant to do anything with is their home. And like I talked about, we've done a previous podcast talking about how that may be one of the best kept bank accounts, using air quotes there, to possibly tap into if you do find yourself in a scenario where you've got one person that's healthy, the other that needs care, and you know you're not intending on leaving that home behind as a family home or as a legacy. So just, again, don't leave any stone unturned. Consider all options.
What are the tax implications when you're paying? If you've got one spouse that's in home and one spouse that's living in a community, what are there special things that should be on the radar?
Yeah, work with an accountant.
Yeah, you do get some tax benefit from the cost of care for the long-term care mm-hmm. community or facility or whatever it is at that point. If you're itemizing your deductions, you can get a nice tax break there for part of what you're paying.
Assuming you reach all the thresholds and everything else. But yeah,
that was the talk to the accountant part. Yeah.
And don't forget about veterans benefits. That's mm-hmm. something I learned about. If you are a veteran or your spouse is a veteran or if you're first generation child of a veteran, you might be eligible for benefits through the VA towards your long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
Estate planning documents, does this change the estate planning at all?
It may start to. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, it's all dependent upon why you're going into the facility, what your level of care need is. I mean, if you've got Alzheimer's or dementia, you can't really change anything within your estate planning documents. Now, your significant other, whoever else has you appointed, can change theirs, but you're kind of stuck with what you got. And sometimes that creates an issue in itself, which is where when we start talking about estate planning documents, it's don't maybe just have plan A, but consider having plan A, B, and C as far as who's going to pick up the baton and run with it if, God forbid, your spouse, significant other isn't here anymore. But outside of that, I mean, the estate plan, you're going to be dwindling down your estate. So if you were concerned about estate taxes or anything like that, that may be a moot point at that point.
And, you know, if you don't have a spouse, children, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a conversation. If you got multiple children, that's very important to have those conversations with your kids about what your next phase of life looks like to you, what your wishes are, just as you would your legacy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you include those people in your meetings when they come in, or is that up to the client?
We present the option. You know, we always want to be able to connect with people, and, you know, more times than not, we're kind of the first person that gets the phone call saying, hey, mom, dad, brother, sister, whoever, they're not doing so great right now. They're getting ready to head to a facility. We got your contact info. You know, in our minds then, that kind of triggers, okay, well, usually that means that there is some kind of need to work with maybe the power of attorney that they have on file, those kind of things. But, yeah, I mean, if we get that phone call, we then have to kind of respond and figure out, is this someone that we can talk to openly about the financial picture, or is there someone else that we need to get into contact with?
Great. Well, we have quite a few podcasts in our library that come to mind as we're talking about this, at least in my mind. One is on estate planning, and the other is talks about diminished capacity. So we would encourage you to brush up on those as well if you're interested in researching this situation for yourself. And doors always open if you're interested in a complimentary consultation. Give us a call. This has been really informative. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
We appreciate you tuning in. We hope you'll catch us on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.